Carlos Machado. What are we going to talk today about episode 7? Huh? I'm going to tell you right away, and I'm just kind of making a mystery here, some suspense, because I know some of you are jumping on board. So where have you been, guys? In the meantime, try to reconnect. Oops. I think the kids there, make sure that they don't have the... Sorry, guys, you got some Wi-Fi here going? All right, cool. All right. Anyhow, it has been a wonderful first week of this Coffee Time project, and I've had some comments and feedback from some listeners and the audience on Facebook that I'm touched. One of my dear friends out of Tulsa sent me a text after, I think 2 days ago, we were talking about when you have a job that you don't like, you might have thoughts of leaving it. I'm going to kind of give you guys the scoop on that and how he found positivity with it. In the meantime, I'm not saying anything. I'm just waiting. Guys, what are you doing? Hold on a second here. Coffee timer here. You know, look at this. Organic Horizon milk, creamer, Irish butter and coconut oil, and good old organic coffee that my friend, brown belt from Louisiana, Wayne Knudsen, gave me, called the Colt. Believe me, it's the name of the coffee. And we're here just getting charged up before this call. And, one thing that's amazing is, I really enjoyed this time with you guys. I just got used to it. It's just kind of like, you know, it's friends getting together and sharing some stuff. And I was really touched when we had the Instagram yesterday that other people jumped on board too and started to ask questions. So one thing different that I'm going to do, a couple things, is I want to have a little bit more time for the Q&A about any of the topics that we're talking about or whatever else you guys want to discuss, okay? The other thing is that came to my mind, and I'm going to elaborate as I see more of the followers coming in. We have a couple of minutes before we go official. We're going to have some goal setting that I'd like to set up together with everyone. And it's just like almost like a game that we're going to choose a certain area that each of us want to tackle and kind of do it together. You know, it could be for a week, it could be for a few days, it could be for a month, it could be a small goal, it could be a bigger goal. And depending on what it is we want to tackle, we're going to help each other out. You know, because this whole idea here is not just spending good time talking, it's also figure out strategies that whatever we talk about that makes sense, we put to use. All right? So let me move the camera here real quick. All right. So I have still some listeners there jumping in. I apologize if I'm not going to the topic right away. Let me correct here the YouTube camera. All right. Just making sure that you guys can see my face, YouTubers. Okay, so gonna get the ball rolling. Anything going on your end, guys? Come on, give me some feedback. Podcasters, remember Miracle Oil. Let me show you here a little magic bottle, my genie from my joint pain.
I have a good question for you.
You know, yes.
What are the benefits of RCJ Machado affiliation? It says,
all right,
DeMarcus Johnson, 1982.
All right, DeMarcus Johnson asked a question about jiu-jitsu, about what are the benefits of becoming involved with RCJ Machado Association? This is a topic, we have some affiliates already there that we work together. We meet twice a year doing instructors training. We have tutorial videos online. We're always available customer service to answer your questions. Our idea is like, if you're teaching jiu-jitsu at your academy, I'd like you to teach my class at your academy. So I can't be there, but you and I and my brothers John and Roger get together. And we have over 100 years of experience that if you accumulated, and we put together the curriculum. And now with the technology, things are getting faster. We just revamped our website. But anyhow, we can give you more specific in regards to the benefits. Once we get to talk to you, if you have want to go a little further on this, we can talk to you privately and give you some of the scoop. What it takes, and I'll send you information. You know, just private message me on my messenger, and we'll send you the information and talk to you personally and give you all the hookups and the info to see what you want to do with it. But the idea is, it's a community. The way jiu-jitsu is, sometimes it can be fragmented, but nowadays you have the trends that all the schools are congregating under a certain flag, under a certain faction, because united we conquer. You know what I'm saying? You have that thing that you have to have somebody watching your back. You know what I'm saying? And in terms of your training, your mentoring, your quality, the way you instruct your classes, and I'm sure you can make your own research, but we have a lot of backup from great people that work with us that I believe can make the life easier for an instructor who wants to be successful and have a higher level of standard on their teaching and producing good students. Did I have anybody else jump in?
Good question here. What was that called for joint pain? J.D. Olson asked.
All right, so let's go back here to the product. Miracle Oil, it's called St. Jude, this little bottle here. It has a strong smell because there's a lot of concentrated oils. The formula is a proprietary blend from my black belt, William Vandry. He's a researcher in the holistic health field, and he has produced incredible results, not just with people, but with pets and stuff. Basically here, it's a concentrated essential oil that is specifically designed to alleviate pain. But, you know, it's not like a symptomatic thing. A lot of times people use creamers or take pills to relieve pain, but they don't solve the problem, all right? So this is off-topic use. You can mix with olive oil to dilute. It doesn't have to be, you know. And I love the smell of it. My wife loves the smell of it. It helps sleep. Like, I put on my hand, then I smell it for a little bit. It opens your airways. You know, if you have allergies and stuff, it has been a blessing for me. And if you go to their Facebook page, St. Jude Miracle Oil, you can get all the information. And I strongly recommend it. I have quite a few students that use it. But I'm trying to promote it more since my friend William Vandry is the official sponsor of our podcast, Coffee Time. Anything else?
A good question from Paul Matrevsky.
Paul Matrevsky has a question.
What would you recommend for someone who doesn't have higher ranks to train with? I'm a brown belt, but I have mostly trained with white belts for most of my 13 years.
All right, somebody is a brown belt and he only has white belts to roll with. All right, so when you teach your white belts?
When you came to Dallas.
See, when I came to Dallas, I left my brothers, I left my cousin in California. There was nobody that was a blue belt in Dallas, Texas. So I had to build from scratch in regards to teaching the students, all white belts. I had guys that had good wrestling experience. They're tough guys already, athletic. So it didn't take long for me to kind of get them in the groove of jiu-jitsu, and they made the workout fun for me, okay? But the thing, before you grow, you have to grow the people around you. You know what I'm saying? If they get better, they're going to push you. And one of the things you're going to notice is you do a lot of positional training. Put yourself in the bad spots often and teach your students a lot how to use techniques from those situations so they can start putting you in a certain degree of challenge, you know, and then in the meantime, it gives you time to build them up in the other areas. And eventually, nowadays, man, people learn faster. You know, I have a white belt in my academy that he can give a sweat to brown belts, believe me. Anybody else?
Michael Alley, 767. Hey, Carlos, how do you recommend taking BJJ notes in order of setup and what to put in your notes?
Okay, Michael Alley has a question about how to take notes in BJJ. Simplify, a lot of times what you do, you don't want to sometimes take too much time describing the whole technique. You name the technique and usually break down in three. Just focus on the setup. You know how the technique ends. Let's say you do an arm bar from the guard. You know how he ends, you have the picture perfect in your mind. Just the setup. Okay, how do I move my hips? How do I get the angle to get the leg over if the guy has his offline? How do I reach? How do I move him? How do I make it happen? Once you got the setup, then how do I control the position? Because a lot of times you set up the guy, but you don't control the guy sleeps out, so you can't finish. So set up, control, then complete the position with the submission. So I would spend time breaking it down in more steps instead of trying to describe the whole thing at once. And once you have that figured out, don't jump into a bunch of other techniques. Try to see if you can make, you know, a flow, even if you have a complete different technique that you're going to take note afterwards. Don't put the technique too close to the first one if they are not related. Kind of leave some space. And then when you want to take notes or something that actually connects the technique that you're taking the notes off, then you put near, you know, that technique. You organize in a certain way so you can have that consistency. You got the guy in the arm bar, you finish him, or if he stacks you, you sweep him and you mount on him. You know, just an example, and then go from there. Yes.
I have a good one from Corey McCoy, which actually, there's another one from Bruce Elliott, kind of says the same thing. First time competing at Masters as a black belt, any hacks to be mentally prepared?
Okay.
The other one says, when you competed, was there any rituals or specific drills
yes.
you focused on?
All right. Okay, we're going to take these two last questions and start the podcast, okay? Both Bruce Elliott and who was the other one?
Bruce Elliott and Corey McCoy.
And Corey McCoy. Thank you guys for the question. One talks about first time competing at the Masters as a black belt, he said?
As a black
belt. Okay, as a black belt. And the other was, what rituals do you follow? I had a book later on, my assistant Chris Garcia, which I'm going to introduce you guys to him in a second. He's going to give you the scoop on the information. I read a book before I became world champion for the first time in 2000 called Mental Toughness for Training. Mental Toughness Training for Sports, something like that. And in that, he describes all the different things in addition to your training, to your conditioning, to your skill set, or the mental preparation. And a lot of people, they use visualization. What I did, my nutrition was 100%. I had pre-workout meals. I had electrolyte drinks throughout the tournament. And I was a bit secluded. I was not too social because I wanted to kind of get myself into the groove. And I always talked to myself that I would claim the space first. So you have to take over the space before you take over the opponent. Meaning, if you have a guy that's going to step on the mat, you step on the mat first. And you get close to the center to shake the guy's hands before you guys start first. And you just tell him one thing, look him into the eyes. May the best win. Don't ever tell the guy good luck. You know, good luck, you're kind of giving the guy good luck. I mean, I don't want anybody to get hurt, but, you know, that's what I call good luck. But the other luck that I talk about is me winning. You know, so I don't want to give that vibration off anything other than focusing on my capabilities. And I just say, may the best win. If the other guy is better than me, I'm cool. I'm going to do my best. If you're competing for the first time in the World's Master, it's the Master's last time. It's a five-minute match. So what you're going to realize is if you secure some points or advantage first, you can almost assuredly win the match by managing the rest of it. I'm not saying stalling, but strategizing in a way that the guy has to chase you. You know what I'm saying? So, and there are other things we can talk about at a later time. We're going to have to get started here. Everything else going on? Yeah, you can go, Bruce Elliott, I believe, I'm not sure if you're a member of Jiu Jitsu Hacker, and I can give you guys more info on that. Jiu Jitsu Hacker was a closed Facebook group that I did, where I upload a couple times a week some little things that I noticed in the training. It's just kind of like, oh man, how do I feel more comfortable escaping from a big guy? How can I finish an armbar when the guy's a bodybuilder and people cannot break the guy's grip? So you have hacks, little things. And, you know, and sometimes I also do special events where I go interact live. I do Q&A. And we get, you know, in the projects coming up soon, also a website that's going to support the Hacker's Facebook page. So if you guys go to Jiu Jitsu Hacker Unlimited on Facebook, it's an open group. Like that page, and then you can click on the link, and you're going to be able to subscribe. And through the email, we're going to send you all the info, what you need to do to get in. It's pretty easy and for a penny, for the dollar. Okay? All right. Is all good? Everybody ready to start? All right, guys. So here we go. Podcast today. Pick your battles wisely. Know which ones are worth spending your time on. Okay, so how many of us sometimes go to the post office and you see that long line? You know, And then you have the envelope right there. You got, you know, you have to get a notary, or you gotta go to the clerk. You can't get away with it. It's something that only the postal office, which for me is a dinosaur of the ages, you know, you have to go there. So you see the line, and then you see the clerk taking the sweet time, and you think, oh man, that guy's not moving fast because he gets paid the same no matter how much more or less work he does. You see the level of enthusiasm sometimes of people that are stuck in a government position. They're stuck there. There's no bonus there. You get a salary, and you get your pension, and your whatever it is, security that you think you have. I've seen governments, like in Brazil right now, man, a lot of people are not getting their money. A lot of the pension, you know, people that have pension, leave off pension. But going back to what I was saying, you start to get frustrated because you feel, why isn't that person working effectively? You start to kind of, you know, you're spending lifetime, you know, time of your life in on the line doing something so trivial as sending mail or a box for somebody, you know, that you care about. And is that a battle worth spending your stress on? Because you got to understand, when you get pissed off, you know what happens to your body? You got that adrenaline, you got a spike of blood pressure, you got everything. Some people will have to literally run 10 miles to bring their chemistry back down to normal if they are on the line in the freaking post office getting pissed off because the clerk's taking their sweet time, and there's a fella in front of you that has 20 boxes. He doesn't use UPS or FedEx. He wants to take the cheap rate from the post office, so he'd rather spend, you know, more hours of the day doing that instead of paying probably 10 bucks more and having it done much faster. So that I consider an example. The other one is like when you have arguments with people that don't listen to you. You know, before you talk to somebody about convincing them of an opinion or a point of view, I guess you should listen first. You know, and then figure out, do they see the picture? Is it ringing a bell where I'm trying to pass here? You know, are we seeing the same color here, or what's going on? You know? And you're trying here and right now not to talk reasonably with somebody. You're trying to fight, not openly, but fight emotionally to convince that person to listen to your point or to open their minds to listen to your point. You know how that feels? You know those cars that you have the battery but you can't actually not drive or ride it? It doesn't have the remote? Kids love those things, right? So you turn the thing on, and it keeps running everywhere in the room, and then it hits a wall, and then it turns right away. Until it hits another wall, and then it turns out. So you could be spinning in a circle in the conversation, and you're going to get nowhere. And all of us are guilty of that. Man, I sometimes get passionate about things, and I start to kind of spend my energy, and I feel my emotions, that my voice starts to elevate. And when you feel you are at that state, actually, you have to start withdrawing a little bit. Okay, I'm going to go a tone down, because it doesn't matter how high I want to escalate this. It's not going anywhere. I hit the wall, you know? So you listen to the person. And a lot of times here, one thing that I do, that I've done, is I get a note. You know, this is a big freaking clipboard with a 8.5 by 11 page. But I take a note. I write down a reference here and there, a note, you know, or send a text message to the person if I have that person's contact. Say, check this reference here, you know, whatever the topic is that we're discussing. And then if they feel like going to that reference, you know, and taking the time to read and learn about the topic you're talking about, if I'm aware of that topic and they're not and they're resisting for whatever bias they have, it might be an option. You know, you talking there and getting into an argument to convince them, you know. And the other thing, too, that, you know, sometimes in regards to picking your battles, nobody will agree with each other all the time, you know. And the thing is, the magic here is, once you know which battles to pick, you may be able to actually work with that person, even if you have differences of opinion. Because a lot of times people get so caught up. You know, if I'm a Cowboy fan and you like the Patriots, the most hated football team, by the way, guys, don't get mad at me. I'm going to confess. I am a Patriots fan. Oh, shoot. I spilled the beans. Hey, if you put mad faces right there, I'm going to erase you from the broadcast here. Oh, just kidding. But anyhow, now I'm not so much into football as much anymore. You know, but going back to what I was saying is, how can we coexist? You know, I'm a Cowboys fan and you're a Patriots fan. And even the fact that when football season happens, we may be sharing the same room watching our teams going against each other. And we can still high five at the end of the day, you know, so like in a nutshell. So this is one of the things. Now, the other things that are a little bit more difficult is my problems are not your problems, you know. And one of the things when you have relationships, you're going to have friends that give you and others that take from you, you know. And I think as a friend, you should be there for somebody that's in need. You should be there for somebody that all they need is an ear, you know, to spill their you know, their grief or whatever, you know, distraught reason they have to vent. But it doesn't mean that you have to enable that person continuously to perpetuate on that state of mind. As a friend, sometimes listening is the first step. Giving an advice to somebody who's really pissed off is not the best time for you to do, because he's pissed off at something. He may not actually be willing to get out of that state until all the anger, you know, is through the drain. You know what I'm saying? So let the person vent. When you see somebody crying a lot or cussing a lot or venting a lot their emotions, you know, listen and kind of invite them to keep on talking and to keep on venting. As long as they are not getting violent or hurting anybody, they are working through that state of mind and eventually empties it out, excuse me, their tank a little bit. And that's kind of like, I think, a strategy that I use in jiu-jitsu. You know, when I see a guy that has good skills and the guy's going after me and wants to tap me out, and I feel like, man, I'm taking the heat right now. Let this guy get tired. Let this guy do everything. Let me feel, you know, which way to go to hide from whatever he's trying to get me. And then as he starts to slow down, then you start to kind of increase the pace and kind of catch up and eventually, you know, get him into, you know, your game. You know, so I think a strategy that if you're watching jiu-jitsu, why not, right? It should work for life too. The worst thing you can do is trying to interrupt that flow. Because if the person is too charged up and you want to stop their flow of emotions, you know, as long as they are not hurting themselves or anybody, let them do it. Because it's trash, it's garbage they're letting out. And once they get rid of it, they're a little bit more susceptible for you to talk with. How many of you have had an argument with somebody, a heated argument, and you both walk out of the room all pissed off at each other? And maybe you didn't call each other for a day or two, and then, you know, and then things started, the dust started to settle, and then later on, one of them, hey, what are you up to? You know, the 2 days have passed, you know, things calmed down, and then you look back and say, that was silly, wasn't it? Shoot. But if you try to intervene and fight too hard in the heat of the moment, you know, it's collision course. You know, it's going to go worse and worse and worse. So I use the jiu-jitsu way, you know. I just feel like, you know, and I feel like it's, whether it's a spouse relationship, whether it's an old friend relationship, whether it's a sibling relationship, you know, you always know when the temperature starts to go above a certain level to the boiling point. And if everybody acts the same way as you escalate, it's going to go from bad to worse, you know. So in the terms of picking the battle, and sometimes you're going to have those that they are so hard-headed. You're trying to help them. They don't want to listen. They just want to keep doing their old ways. And you have to let them hit their head on the wall, you know, because they're refusing to open up. They're refusing to learn. You can't stop the process. Maybe that's the best thing that can happen to somebody, is to fail on something. Because then they don't have to take anybody else's advice on it. They just see for themselves, shoot, man, I was a freaking dumb, you know, fool-minded guy that didn't listen to anybody. I should have listened. But once they have that Eureka moment, they might be thankful. They might go back to you saying, hey, man, sorry for the outburst. You know, I shouldn't have done this or that. I should have listened to you. So, but if you embark on that same journey that the guy is going to go crash and you want to stop the guy from crashing, and in doing so, you both crash together, I don't think that's a good strategy, do you? So that brings us to another topic in regards if you want to help somebody out. My question here is, how do you know you're helping somebody? You might think you're helping somebody. If, let's say, a student of mine comes to my gym. Back in the old days, you know how Brazilians are, right? Brazilians, they have the Brazilian way. Oh, man, I don't have that much money to pay the tuition here. Can you give me a discount? And then you give them a discount. And then next month, oh, man, I'm out of job right now. You know, I had to buy a new car or the tire went off. It was expensive. Can you let me go for free this month and I start paying you again next month? Okay. So you alleviate the guy's tuition that month. Oh, man, you know, my new job is not going to pay me until later, you know, and just kind of, and actually what the guy's doing, he's slacking, he's sleeping until 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon every day. He goes party at night all the time. He's too tired to do his damn job. You know, he's too tired to look for a decent job. He spent all his money on the girlfriend that's a gold digger. So you have all those things going on. The guy's doing all those self-destructive acts and behavior. And you're there trying to be the nice guy. So what are you doing? You think you're helping the guy? Go to a doctor's office and go pay a consultation. But before you do it, or a treatment, you say, hey, doctor, you know what happened? My wife bought a diamond today. You know, it was more expensive than I thought. I thought I could break down in payments, but I have to pay the lump sum. Can you let me treat, you know, my ulcer with you for free? And then when I get some money, I give him payments like, you know, 10 bucks a month for the rest of my life. What do you think is going to be? You're not going to even pass through the door. You know what I'm saying? And if you did use the guy's service and you didn't pay, you're going to have those billings coming in, those collection agencies calling you. And then, you know, it's going to be, you know, people don't take that lightly. So why are you, so helping somebody is not enabling somebody to perpetuate in the behavior, you know? So tough love sometimes, you know, hey, your problem is not my problem. This is not a charity. Why am I going to give you a discount? I give you a discount. What about the other guy there that pays full price? You know what I'm saying? So, what's the difference between you and the guy? I can be your best friend, but when you come to my gym, I cannot treat you different than anybody else. You know what I'm saying? It's a business. And it's unfair to the other guy. So let's say the other guy now finds out that I gave you a discount. I might lose that customer. I'm losing the guy that actually pays me more than you to favor you. And then later on, you kind of, you know, turn your back on me and just flip, you know, and just go your way. And I'm here. Not only I didn't take your money when you said you didn't have it, I lost the money of somebody who was a good paying member. Now multiply that by everybody. You know, a bunch of people that will always ask you the same favor. You know, so don't help people by enabling them in the behavior that's actually contributing to their situation. The other thing is, sometimes people are not ready to be helped. You know, they have to actually go through the problem. You know, guy wants to go, you know, he has to grow up on with his own experience, with his own scars. But believe me, once he goes through that, he's going to be battle tested. And I'm sure he's going to look back and think, oh, man, if I listened, I should have done this. I should have talked to that person.
You can't have a testimony, you know? You can't have a testimony without a test.
Yeah, I guess there's a quote here. Spouse was saying, you cannot have a testimonial without a test. How can you tell if the product is good if you never used it? I use miracle oil. I like it. You know, even if you should try a bottle.
With trials and tribulations.
You know? Yeah, but when you have challenges and you go through those, you can come back with your personal story and people will see you have a track record. You're not hiding anything. You're not creating any lie. You're coming with the true deal, you know. Now, I wish everybody was wiser, including myself, that you see somebody burning their fingers when they put their hand on the hot stove. And, you know, you are wise enough that you're not going to do that. But how many kids, you know, they might see a sibling getting burned, but they didn't actually experience the burning themselves. So another day they go there and they are careless and they put their hands in the stove and they get their finger burnt, even after watching their sibling getting burnt first. So a lot of times, the wise thing to do is, oh, if that's not good for that guy, duh, it shouldn't be good for me either, but I still do it. So you deserve it. You know what I'm saying? You deserve a burned finger or a bang in the head. But, you know, they say that if you learn from your mistakes, you're smart. If you learn from the mistakes of others, you're wise. So some people, they wise up faster than others. Let's put it this way. So the thing about helping, like I said, you may not be giving the right help to the right person, or you may try to help somebody who is not ready to be helped, somebody who is in a victim state. You know what the victim state is? Is a story that they tell, that they're poor me, their life sucks, that everything is bad, and it's all gloomy. They don't see the sunlight, they see the rain. They don't see the blue sky, they see the clouds. So what happens is, it's their identity. Sometimes they don't have anything else going in their lives other than trying to make you feel sorry for them. You know what I'm saying? So they will tell their sob story because they want sympathy. You know, that's all they got going.
But that's the worst thing
you know, do. But the problem is, your reaction is, somebody tells you, oh, I'm miserable here, I'm miserable there, I'm so sorry for myself, you know, everything, you know. And then you say, oh, poor thing, you know, you want to pet, you know, the victim animal inside that person instead of purge it, you know. So at one point in time, you can't just condone with it and react, you know. I think if somebody tells me something negative, I'll never say that person is wrong. I'm going to just try to rebate by telling something positive. Somebody was telling me, oh, the dengue fever in Brazil, the mosquitoes, if you walk out in the afternoon now and you get bit, you have to put repellent in this and that. God forbid, you know, at my age right now, if I get this like that, I'm going to die of dengue fever. Nobody gets dengue fever these days. You have like a handful of people that are undernourished in the ghetto town. They're probably, you know, having problems, health problems of other nature. What I told the person, I said, oh, man, come on. Those mosquitoes are not that bad. It doesn't hurt that much. If they bite you, it's because your blood is sweet. You know, you're sugar. You know, so I just kind of have to not try to ridicule the person, but try to really create the image to awaken. You know, so whenever they have that talk and use that kind of argument, you know, oh, you know, corruption here is terrible. The government this, the government that. I said, man, do you know any country in the world that when you say politics, there's not something under the table going on here and there? Are you serious? Do you know how many people before they get to office, they have to make deals that they already get paid even before they take their post?
In every country.
Every country in the world. That's the wheel of the engine. I'm not saying there aren't good people in politics, and I'm a hopeful person in that regard, but it's not going to let me down if a politician promises something and doesn't fulfill. Because history repeats itself. You know what I'm saying? And I think people and governments, they kind of reflect one another. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times the citizens will expect the government to do for them what they should do for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're accountable for yourself, I think it's easier for you on a larger scale to hold the government accountable for you. But if you want to just be on the food stamps and Social Security and kind of milk from the system, you know, I guess you're cheating more than anybody yourself. Because for me, the saddest story in the world is wasted talent and wasted opportunities. How many people? You know, I think it's a lot harder for you to stay mediocre than actually working towards becoming successful. For you to be mediocre, you really have to sabotage every opportunity and everything that comes at you. You have to work really hard to stay low, below the radar. And the thing, when you work towards being more successful in whatever it is you're going to go for, you can see the results happening almost instantaneously. You know, it's crazy. So you would think that everybody, you know, oops, sorry. Everybody that does something that makes their life better or the lives of others better will have an incentive to keep pursuing and doing more and more, you know, will just jump into that wagon and forget being this mediocre lifestyle. But no, but you know what happens here? It's fear. Fear of change, fear of responsibility, fear of accountability. Because there's something that's very true. Once you know what it takes, you know how to get there, and you don't do it, there's no blame other than to yourself. And why would that reason be? It's because when you become successful, you're no longer hiding. You know, you're out there. So everybody's eyes is going to converge to you. You're going to have the haters that are going to envy you. Ah, that guy this, that guy that. They don't see all the hard work, all the effort, all the things that you've done to accomplish that state of success. You know, if they don't have what you have and they don't have the growth mentality to look up to your example and try to follow through your footsteps in whatever degree or use you as an inspiration instead of trying to slander you for their slacking. You know, a hater tells me, oh, I hate you. I said, thank you. You know, I know what you're saying as that you like what I do, but you don't have what it takes to do yourself. That's pretty much the translation there. And but then once you reach success, you're out of the cover. There's no cover there, man. So you have to be accountable for your actions because you have more people looking at you. And you see a lot of times with celebrities that never had it made and all of a sudden success comes too quick to them. They're not mentally ready. In their mind, they still have all the mindset where their lives were and they were lacking this and lacking that. So if they didn't have money, all of a sudden, they start to indulge in buying mansions and cars and airplanes and going crazy and giving, you know, one house for each relative. And they just go like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, I'm the king of the world, you know. And so you have that side effect. And also their personality. If they had any things, their traits, they're negative. Instead of trying to kind of work towards bettering the betterment of their good personal traits, they are going to reveal more their dark side. They become arrogant. They feel they're superior. They're better than everybody. And they start to be rude and jackasses and act like, you know, everybody owes them something. You know, that's the dark side of success. I don't consider that success. I think if they had a status of celebrity with fame and money and everything else that comes along with it, and they are not mature, they're going to succumb. You know, then you get into drugs, you get into womanizing. If you have a family stable and stuff, all of a sudden, you know, everybody comes at you. You know, you got a nice car, you got money to afford going anywhere. What do you think the chicks will do? You know, they're going to look at you, hey, let me go dig that guy. You know, I was actually watching some viral YouTube videos. What's his name? Rob TV? The guy has a channel with millions of people. You know those guys that want to ask for a girl's number, this hot-looking girl on the road, on the street, in a cafe or restaurant, and the girl doesn't give the guy, you know, any time and doesn't pay attention to the guy. And then I guess Rob starts to talk, conversation, oh, this and that, would you like to go out with me sometime? And the girl, no, you know, this and that. And then all of a sudden he pulls with a brand new car, a convertible Corvette or a Porsche. And then all of a sudden, the girl opens big eyes like that. Hey, you know, oh, nice car. Hey, my name is so-and-so. You still want my number? And then the guy pretends he's going to get the number. And then he turns his back and says, nah, I don't want you. You're a gold digger. You know, you know, it was kind of hilarious. But anyhow, going back to that success mindset, success is an animal, you know, and it's responsibility every single time. And now that we are talking about the picking of the battles, I'm going to close down so we can have a little bit of time for the Q&A. I think the way I guess I discriminate what battles to pick is if there's too much resistance, whether from you or from the person, because sometimes it's the other way around. You don't want to hear what the person's saying. You don't want to hear. And you are the one, actually, who is not ready for the battle. So in that sense, if you are not receptive and you should hear something, but you're not willing to, that point in time to save the other person and to save yourself, you say, you know what, let's kind of chill and we'll talk about that at a later time. You know, when you feel the temperature is going up, you kind of try to go one tone down and wait. Because patience takes care of everything. I'm not saying not to act when you need to act. Sometimes you have to break up, you know. Don't break up with a girlfriend by email. Be man enough. Don't do what I did 2 years ago. Not 2 years ago, shit. Excuse me, I'm married. Sorry, babe. I'm married for like 17 years. I guess 25 years ago, to be exact. All right. You guys are laughing at me there. My math sucks, man. Married for 17 years and say that I sent an email to break up with a girlfriend 2 years ago. Does that sound good? Shoot, that's on the...
Like divorce.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, the wife now is going to go through my mail. Oh, honey, that was a mistake. Anyhow.
The joke's on her.
All right. Anyhow, going back to our saying, but I've had situations that I broke up with an ex-girlfriend by email. I didn't want to hurt the girl and I didn't have a... Man, don't do that. Just say it. You know, it sucks, but you're going to feel better and it's going to be better for everybody in the end. All right? Hold on. Coffee time. So now it is time for Q&A. You guys ready to rock? Do you guys like so far this talk? Podcast fellas. Coffee time, Carlos Machado, 9 a.m., Monday to Thursday. So give me some likes if you like it, and let's go and roll with the questions. Come on. I'm going to just sip my coffee here.
Have a good one from Michael Alley 767. How do you go about someone in the gym that may not be a team player and keeps all his or her BJJ to themselves for self-success rather than being a team member?
All right, Michael Alley asked if somebody in your gym is not a team player. I think you can do the three strikes, you're out formula. First, invite that person and talk to that person. You know, hey, bud, you know, great. You know, you do great. You're an awesome guy. But you're not sharing with anybody. You come here just for yourself. You're being selfish. Can you help me out? Can you help the guy out? And see if the guy's going to get out of his shell with it first. Second time, you know, if there's a click, you know, the guy only works with some people and this and that. If you're the one that actually owns the business, you're an instructor, you break the bubble. Break the click right away. Don't let the guy just pick the same person all the time. And you start to kind of mix him up, whether he likes it or not, with other people. And the third, you give him the pink slip. You know, say, man, you're a great guy, great martial artist. I don't think this gym is for you. I think you should look for another place because you may have more to grow in other places here right now. I feel we had conversations before. It's a team, and it's everybody should be a team player. And I don't think people can help you. You're too good, or, you know, you should go your own way. You know, find your spot. Oop, something happened here on... my YouTube. Yeah. All right, folks. Okay, let me turn this off. Okay.
Let me turn it off.
Yeah, can you turn this off? Mm-hmm. A second here. So, you guys good there? So, that's the answer right there. That's okay. We'll shut YouTube and then we do. Is it still shooting?
No. It's
okay. You can go and press again. We'll go another record. Press the. Sorry, guys. Just for a sec. Video recording unavailable. Okay, I guess we have a time frame. So let's not worry about this and go for the other question. Sorry, guys. We're almost done here. On the Instagram, we have another question. Go ahead.
How do you keep a guy down after you take him down? A lot of people get up, or they're good at getting right back up.
All right. So this is a jiu-jitsu question.
The Gigi Mochia.
Gigi Mochia. How do you keep somebody down after you take them down? Okay. So, and I'm going to try to make a mindset comparison. You take a problem down, you take a tree down, do you cut the branches or you cut the base of the tree? You go low, you cut close to the roots, because once it's down, it loses grip on the earth, you know, it's going to stay down, all right? So in regards to a guy, when you're doing jiu-jitsu, the worst thing you can do is try to work the guy's upper body. The control is on the legs and on the hip. The guy tries to stand up, you stay with the legs. You keep the legs from touching the ground. If you try to go for the upper body too soon, and other times you just switch sides. The guy turns to one side, you know, you switch for the other side, and you keep kind of changing angles so your weight stays consistent without giving the guy. But like I said, work from the bottom up, not from the top down. Hold on. Somebody has on Facebook Live a question here. Are you on Facebook Live as well?
I am.
Okay, Kelly Reif, she yes. just sent a question.
I see it. What would you advise students to do if a fellow student leaves a gym you are at, but you're still friends with them?
Okay, so I have no control over who your friends are. If you're my student and there's a problem with another student who's a friend of yours and the guy leaves my gym, as far as I'm concerned, you can be the guy's friend. I mean, who am I to tell you who to talk to? The only thing that I keep in mind is if that person is trying to undermine my gym through you and you're collaborating with that person, then you're going to fall into a category that's different than just having your freedom to be a friend to a former student. You're going to be a student who is a friend of another student who left our gym. And if that student has an agenda against my gym and you become condoning or part of it, it may spill towards you. Okay? But if you don't do anything wrong, you're all good. Chris Massey
yes.
has a question. What was that?
It says, how do you handle students that live or do YouTube live techniques, trendy designer type techniques?
Okay. The thing, pick a designer technique. Pick any technique, a designer technique, and show a fundamental that applies to that technique. Okay, great. Now, a lot of times here, when you have guys that do a lot of YouTube, I think it's a great tool, but you have to just watch for the Frankenstein jiu-jitsu, because you get information from one person, then information from another person, and you try to tie up all together into your game, and you have to have cohesion when you have jiu-jitsu. You have to have a core of techniques, and you have to build it gradually and make that, you know, ingrained in your system. And just try to jump. Now, I think for research purposes, you know, if the guy is a guy that watches a lot of YouTube and he learns fancy stuff, give him the advice that try to tie up the fancy with the fundamentals so one works along with the other. Don't be a guy that has an awesome guard, but if the guy passes your guard, you don't know how to get out from the side control. You know, you get mounted, you're stuck, you don't do anything, and you have an awesome guard. That's ironic. Anything else?
Have one from Instagram here.
Okay.
How do you suggest to deal with someone who is too aggressive in class, like they're going for a title fight during a spar?
Yeah. Okay. The thing about students that go too fast, too hard, too aggressive, may be too spastic, might hurt one another, it's not a lack of technique or instruction from the instructor. Is they don't. You got one of the first things the students have to learn is how to train. If they're going to spar with other students, it's not a final of the world championships every time they spar. And a lot of times what happens too, some guys have a lot more rage moments or tension or stress, or they're conditioned a certain way. Guys that do a lot of weightlifting, have a strong wrestling background, they're used to explosion. So jiu-jitsu for them becomes kind of like their channel to just burst. You know, I have students even today, I don't teach them that much technique. I work on their pace. Slow down, slow down, slow down. So there are guys, though, that actually had in the past that I didn't allow them to spar with other students on mine. They are my students as well because they were very strong, very big, very aggressive, and they would freak out if they were in a bad position, and they would end up hurting themselves or hurting other people. So I told them, you can do drills and flow drills. You cannot spar. And you know what happened? Eventually, the guy slowed down, and then he was able to roll. Because he knew more, his techniques got better. It was not that big of a deal if he was in a good or a bad position. But so here, the answer in a short sentence, teach them how to train, not just technique.
I have one from Facebook. Arturo Treto says, if I don't have the money to train with my teacher, but I helped teach with another school that closed, and the students from that school didn't have the money to train with my teacher, is it wrong for me to want to open up a garage gym?
I think here you have to do what you can, but I think this question here is kind of twisted. If you have a good instruction from a school and you don't have money to pay for that tuition, instead of going to the garage, I mean, if you want to go to the garage to supplement your training, I understand it's a viable option. But to replace your instructor and your teacher and all the people there, or taking the guy's students from your teacher that don't have the money either to pay, it's kind of messy a little bit. Don't you have a mean, maybe with your skill set or with the connections that you have at the school, that you can get a job that pays you a little better, that can provide you the means to pay for your fees when you go train at that school? I think instead of just getting to settle for less, you try to, you know, fix the situation. You know what I'm saying? Get some money and pay the instructor. You know what I'm saying? Rise to the occasion. I have guys in my gym that lost jobs, and I have other students in my gym that own businesses. Guess what I did? I probably had, you know, several students of mine that at different time came to me saying, I'll lose my job, I may not have money to pay for the tuition. What I told the guy, I was like, what do you do? You know, and then, oh, I do this, I do that. Okay, I have that guy right there has a business. He might be, you know, in need. Let me hook you guys up. Lo and behold, they got hired and they don't lose their job. And guess what? I didn't lose the student. He was proud because he was able to pay his bills and the situation was there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Josh Gilly asks, I like this one because I have a child as well. Advice on beginning children in BJJ.
Same process. Nice and easy. I like slow and steady instead of fast and furious. I've heard of gyms that teach the kids competition right off the bat. And the way they open each other's guard, they're allowed to body slam. They can lift a little bit and just throw each other on the ground, which is kind of crazy. You know, there are kids that do MMA training that get knocked out at age 8. Can you imagine that? You know, I mean, so if you're a dad, you got to look at the sanity of the gym. You want your kids to go train. You have to look at the sanity of the parents that takes their kids there. Because I've seen actually parents get into fights. Not in my gym. I've heard of it. In places where they were watching their kid. And they would try to actually give the kid advice instead of the instructor being allowed to teach the class. The parents are right there on everybody's face. And then if the kid didn't do well, the kid would get spanked when they got home. And then the instructor tried to address the issue, and the man got mad and wanted to get in a fight with the instructor. You have those horror stories. It's ironic, but it's true. You know. And so be mindful. Find an environment that's a family environment, that the kids look healthy and happy, and nobody's banged up.
What's a good age?
In my gym, you know, we have a four-year-old, three- and four-year-old. I call the little cubs. And then from five and up, you do the children's training and go from there.
And Ted Tide had a good question. How important do you feel that daily quiet or reflection time is in being successful?
If you don't have it, you know it's a major element, because the thing is, time has to be managed to your advantage. If you just give time to everybody else and never time to yourself, you don't have one. Chance to refresh, two, chance to reflect, three, chance to recharge. How are you going to keep on giving if you're not giving back to you first? You know what I'm saying? It starts from you. So I think if you don't do that, if you don't take that time, you're sabotaging yourself.
Heath Thompson asked, how do you feel about students asking their instructor what they need to work on to move towards their next promotion?
You know, people have this thing about rank that it's a sin if you ask your instructor about rank. Like you're trying to speed up the rank. You know, that's BS. Train, show up. And instructor, if you're an instructor, show them what they need to do and what it takes to get to the next level. The communication has to go both ways. You go to the gym and then the guy says, you train here in one day when it's a nice day, I may give you a belt. You know, what the heck? You know what I'm saying? No criteria. So there has to be a criteria. You know, don't be embarrassed to ask what do you need to improve, you know, in order to grow. What else? That's it?
Any other questions so far?
All right. So clean the match for him. Brandon Bryant saying clean the match for him. Are you talking about
that's going back to your
exchange? Mm-hmm. All right. So the thing about exchange also, let's kind of compliment on that. Then it's a bad deal, in my opinion. I think sometimes it's the only option on the table, but it's not the best option, you know. And I'll tell you why. Anytime you do favors, somebody's going to get the losing end of it. Either the student that cleans is going to be doing way more than what he's bargaining for, or the instructor will be missing out. Then the bottom line is, if the guy doesn't have the means to pay, the first thing he has to do is find ways to make money so he can afford the things he wants to do. So that's the core thing. Trying to perpetuate. Now, I'm not against collaboration and exchange of favors. But anytime I do you a favor, you do me a favor. If the guy does you a favor and you don't feel you reciprocate, you almost feel guilty, you know? Somebody popped out here.
It's another one from Arthur.
Okay.
He asks, he says, this student never really trained under my teacher. We were a branch off of them, and I feel like they're partially my student's kids and adults. Reason we didn't keep going with our school, it's kind of like what you talked about before, people not paying dues on time.
Yeah.
So it seems like...
Money is not the root of evil. Money is something that... It's an honest conversation with ourselves. You know, what are we doing to pay for our obligations and afford the things that we want to afford? Sometimes people say they don't have money to pay for a tuition. Martial arts schools can range from $50 to $300. You have different ranges of prices there. And they spend money on going for trips, or money on buying stuff on Amazon all the time, all the gadgets. So if you really think about, even with what you have, if you prioritize, you might be able to afford whatever it is you're lacking. Is that it?
Here's another one. It's actually good. George Ibarra.
Okay.
Ask, if you injure yourself, but you don't want to stop training, what would be the best advice?
Jiu-jitsu molds to your situation. You work around your injury. You know, I had a left shoulder that was bothering me. You know, sometimes I even put one hand inside the belt. I go with one arm. The creator of the half guard, Roberto Gordo Correa, who was my student back in Brazil, he is the coach, jiu-jitsu coach of Rafael dos Anjos. He had a knee problem. He couldn't use his legs. He couldn't do full guard. So he started doing half guard, and lo and behold, because of that, he was able to develop a new strategy and skill set in jiu-jitsu that literally revolutionized jiu-jitsu. You know, nobody knew or did the deep half guard game before, since Roberto Gordo, because of his injury. Neil Adams, Olympic judo champion from the UK, he was never an Olympic champion until he hurt his knee. You know, when he hurt his knee, he couldn't do the same takedowns, so he had to pull guard, and he specialized in doing arm bars. He tapped out more people in arm bars than he did doing takedowns. And he was good in takedowns. But once he had his injury, after that, he adapted his training and became Olympic champion. You know, isn't that cool? Somebody said something else?
Actually, I have one over here on Instagram.
Okay, Instagram has a question. We're almost done.
What are your thoughts of BJJ gyms who won't let you wear a gi from another gym, even if you take off the badges? And do you have a favorite gi?
All right. So on gis, I'm not talking much about gis right now, because gis, we have so many different gis, and I haven't made the research, so I don't want to be biased. But in regards to instructors or gyms, they have a policy. If they don't allow you to wear a gi when it's not your gym, you're traveling, you know, and then you go to that gym. If that's the gym's policy, I can't control what the instructor thinks is the best for his gym. But I think if somebody comes to my gym, you know, and I'll try to hook the guy up and help the guy out.
But if
you know,
they're not traveling.
You know, if they're not traveling. But if you're a regular member of the gym, you should, you know, wear the patches. Sorry. You should wear the patches, or, you know, respect whatever the rules of the gym are. So, anyhow, is that it? All right, guys. So, listen, don't forget to check out St. Jude Miracle Oil, the sponsor of our podcast. And what was that?
You had about 30 seconds.
And I got 30 seconds. I want to give a shout out to everybody, 9 a.m., so I may have to do a pre-recorded video for tomorrow. I'll be up in the air. So, or I may have to schedule a different schedule. One or the other, we're going to have our edition once I'm on ground. And I thank you guys again. If you haven't yet subscribed to Coffee Time with Carlos Machado's podcast, please do it. I'll talk to you guys soon. See you all later. Thank you.